Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend. Now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs.
Warren,
an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs
to hell. You're doing the wickedest
thing here. Never come back again.
You see, Jason is my son, and today is his birthday.
All right, for tonight's episode, this is basically a follow-up to episode number 86 from last year with Vincent DeSanti, the writer and director of the Friday the 13th fan film Never Hike Alone. On that episode, Vince gave us some details on what we could expect to see on his take on our favorite franchise. The film was released back on October 13th, 2017, and as of this recording, will have been out for about 4 months now and has already had over 105,000 views. So tonight, I would like to welcome back my friend Vincent DeSanti to talk about all the things we couldn't talk about before, and of course, some current thoughts and reactions to the film. So Vince, glad to have you back. You know, you're always welcome here at Return to Camp Blood.
Thanks for having me, Nathan. I'm glad I came in at the right time this time.
Hey, there you go. But yeah, so let's just kick this off. I mean, it's obviously been out for a little while. I wanted to wait, give plenty of people chances to react and reviews and all that good shit. So been out almost 4 months now, over 105,000 views. So just to kick things off with that in mind, 105K, what are your thoughts on that? When you hit the release button back on October 13th, where did you think you would be down the road? Are you over or under in views?
I mean, I think I'm about right where I thought I'd be. You know, 100,000 was kind of like where I really wanted to get it to. I wanted to get into that six figure kind of land and let it go there. And you know, it was weird. It was, you know, we went to Telluride and we released that night. And as I got out of the screening and I started to watch, it's really addicting to watch the views just kind of jump up and the comments kind of spring up. And I think that's what's meant the most, is that there's a lot of videos and things that I've looked at, and I've gone on YouTube and I've seen things with like a million videos, but they only have like 1,000 comments. I mean, we're already at 1,000 comments at 100,000 views, 5,000 likes, like all these like people are actually engaging in it. And I think that's been the best part, because people are talking about it. And for me, it's just amazing to see so many other people react to it, especially because some people knew about it going into it, but to see now that we were able to show what we were up to, that it kind of hit and spread, and you know, it spread around the Friday the 13th community the way we wanted it to, and that's who we were making it for. And we seem to be getting some fringe horror fans as well who aren't enjoying it. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy with the result.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of figured that it would be a little higher because of all the buzz prior. Your Kickstarter did kick ass. And there was a ton of Friday fans on board. So I kind of thought it would be a little bit higher, but I have to say over 100,000, it's still like, wow, that's fucking awesome. And Landon and I both got to see it early for review purposes. And obviously, you know that we did a thoughts episode recently and you listened to that. So you know our basic thoughts and so on and so forth with that, which we'll get into some specifics later. And there's not much criticism with this film, which is amazing, because people just rip the shit out of some of the other Fridays. And I've heard some people,
especially for a Friday.
yeah. So you know how harsh the Friday fans can be. And a lot of people have went on to say, I've heard it more than once, that to them, this is number 13 in the 13th installment. This is the number 13 to them. So to me, that speaks volumes. And it's just like, wow. I mean, I'm just so happy that the community has taken so great to it, and just a big congratulations on your success.
Thank you. And you know, I mean, that's how we feel. I mean, we're so proud that, you know, so many Friday fans have come out and supported the film and really, like, you know, rallied behind it and accepted it and considered it, you know, consider it canon, you know, all these different things. And obviously we're a fan film. We are a rogue nation of Friday the 13th. So, you know, we'll never really be that big part of it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's been a long time since we've all kind of sat around the tube and watched a Friday the 13th that we all could kind of just sit back and enjoy. And it wasn't trying to figure too many things out. It wasn't trying to rewrite the rule book. It was just a simple Friday the 13th movie. And we could all sit down and enjoy Friday the 13th. And I think that, I don't know, that was kind of the biggest accomplishment of it all. It was that, like, we hit that date. We actually made fans happy. And so, yeah, we're, you know, elated by that. I mean, it's amazing. I expected a lot more criticism, especially with the way that Jason looked and the mask and, you know, just different things, because you're, you know, when you're out there and you're working on with a $40,000 budget, and even though that's, like, way more than most fan films and, you know, way less than a lot of things, you're in this weird spectrum of, like, things could go expensively horribly wrong. So, I mean, it's definitely, going into it, it was definitely like a big fear of mine. Like, man, I really hope we didn't miss the mark. I hope people appreciate, you know, what we've done here. And I think people have been forgiving too. You know, I think they know it's that quality of film, but at the same time, you can see the effort and passion went in to try and elevate it as far as we could.
Absolutely. And there's always going to be the shit talkers out there, and we'll get to some of that criticism a little bit later. But Lando and I were talking right before we started recording, and I want Lando to pipe in here. And if you recall what you said about some of the latter films in the series compared to this film, if you could kind of give an overview about what we talked about then.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a kind of situation where you never want anybody to take it the wrong way, because, I mean, I love Kane Hodder. And when I say that, it's not an exaggeration. I'm just saying it's that age old thing, is you hear people talk all the time about the Kane Hodder's Friday films. He was in four of them, and everyone's like, if Kane was so great, then why did his movie suck so much? And not all of them did, but I'm saying once you get past the New Blood, they really kind of went a different direction. But I'm just saying, like, the last three that Kane was in, I look at this, I look at Never Hike Alone, I look at that's easily better than any of those. And, you know, you like the idea of canon and whatnot. It just, as a fan, you look at it, it kind of reminded me a little bit of when The Force Awakens came out. I remember I left that. Some friends of mine that asked, you know, how was it and everything? And I told them, for the first time in a long time, I felt like I just saw a Star Wars movie. And with Never Hike Alone, that's how I felt. I was like, that's the Friday the 13th. You know, that's something that's what we've been waiting for. And, I mean, I can't think of a better compliment to drop other than that. It's just that, you know, you hit the mark. My biggest question for you would just be, as much time and effort and the focus you had going into, did you ever have that moment as a fan where you step back and you're like, you know, I'm playing Jason Voorhees? Or, I mean, I know, like, when I first had watched it, I didn't look at anything on IMDb or anything. So when Tom Matthews popped up, I had, like, I'm not going to sit here and say I screamed, but I had a moment where I was like, holy shit, you know, that made, I was loving it already, but then it was like giddy. But did you have a moment like that yourself as you're making it, that, you know, Tommy Jarvis is on set, you know, you're playing Jason? And, I mean, just how much fun did you have as a fan doing this?
There was a moment while we were filming the ambulance scene where we were rehearsing the maggot headline. And somebody told me afterwards, after we were done filming, they were like, you should have seen yourself when you were standing in front of that monitor. And he said that line, like, you were smiling so hard. And it was, I mean, like, we were like, I just, you know, it was kind of that moment where you're like, wow, like, not only did, like, I could sense that, like, I can't, like, not only from the sense that he was saying it, but I was like, I can't wait for people to see this. Like, I cannot wait to share this with people and have them do this. I mean, we actually did a table read about a week before where that, I mean, we were trying to work with something on the line, and it wasn't written that way at the table read. It was kind of like, we had a bunch of stuff that we ended up crossing out and really working on and make sure it was kind of refined. But we came up with that line there, and it was Tom and Barry. I think Barry pitched part of that line, and Tom came up with some of it, and it was kind of based on what I was trying to go for, and they nailed it. And Susie said that, you know, the remember me asshole, like, it was like, I don't know. It was just like icing on the cake, and just seeing that and having them do it. And I think what was most exciting as a fan was, there was a moment where, like, we were sitting there, and I was giving Tom direction, and I think what was most rewarding to me is that it wasn't like my biggest fear was like, this guy's going to come on set and I'm going to just embarrass him, or he's going to be embarrassed to be here or something like that. But it couldn't have been like any more opposite. He was so gracious the entire time he was on set. He's a ham. He's so funny. He was making everybody laugh, you know, doing funny things in between takes. And, you know, when I talked to him, he listened. And, you know, we connected from, you know, from the moment we met back in like January of last year, and the continuing kind of back and forth that we've had, you know, never once has Tom, you know, ever been anything but supportive, you know, and he's always been a champion of the idea and a champion of the project. And, you know, he's been so much fun to work with, and it was crazy having to like hold that secret. I did tell Nathan, like I had to tell somebody. And so we had kind of talked about that behind the scenes, and I had talked about, you know, how things are working out. But that whole experience has been really great. We keep in touch now. I don't know if you guys saw, but I mean, like we can't go after, we don't know what we can really do for like a Never Hike Alone 2 if, you know, we'd love to make one and Tom's on board. So is Andrew. And we talk about it all the time because we have a story. We know what we want to do. It's been based on kind of what we were doing in Never Hike Alone 1 and spurned out of getting to know Tom and, you know, the way we talked about Tommy and stuff like that. And so we keep in touch about that all the time because we legitimately want to find a way to do it. We just know we can't do it the way we did it before because that version of a movie deserves more than kind of the fan film budget. It needs a legit budget. I'm not saying 20 million. I'm saying like an old school Friday the 13th, a couple million. Let's go out there indie style and make a really good Friday the 13th film for the fans.
Yeah. And Vince and I got to meet up and have some beers right after Christmas. And obviously I'm not going to give any details, but he did give me a little bit of information about the idea for number two. And I have to say that it, if it does come together, it's going to be badass. People are going to love it. But speaking of Tom, now, did Tom ever give you his opinion as far as what you did with the character? Was he like, oh, I think it's great that Tommy's an EMT, or did he ever give his thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. No, he was totally on board with that. We sat down a couple times and we talked about where the character was. There was a moment when I was trying to play safe, I would say. And I'd kind of pitched like, well, you can do a cameo, but maybe we won't have you do Tommy. That way people don't try to confuse it or do anything. Like we'll have you do it. And that character was going to die. And at that moment he was like, no, man, he's like, you can use Tommy, like have it be Tommy. And let's figure out. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, I've been thinking about it, and Tommy makes sense as an EMT to me. I mean, like, you know, his connection with, you know, so much tragedy, he might actually fit well as a first responder and find relief in that, saving people's lives, going out every night and trying to save the day, kind of, you know, reliving that moment that he keeps reliving in his head. It helps him deal with it somehow. And, you know, having his team and being to go out there and help every way they can, it seems like a life that would make sense to him. And in Crystal Lake, it would make even more sense because if he's trying to keep an eye on things, what better way to be than on the first responding team? He's going to hear all the police calls. He's going to hear everything else. So it's his way of kind of like working through his stuff, as you could say, like trying to wondering if, you know, because prior to this, he's wondering if Jason's still out there. He knows he's not on the chain down in Camp Crystal Lake anymore, but no one's seen him. So it's, you know, it can get interesting like that.
Oh, for sure. I was just curious as to what his thoughts are. I do remember back in the summer when you showed me what was going on. You didn't give all the details, but you're like, here, check this out. And I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. Yeah. And I told Lando, and I just said, hey, when you watch this, you're going to be blown away. There's a cameo in there, and I'm just going to leave it at that. And he didn't try to ask any more information. He just said, okay, cool. And then, of course, what, three months later, then the film, three or four months later, the film finally comes out. And I think his first words to me were like, holy shit, that ending. So,
yeah.
which you just said that, Lando, anyway, when you saw the cameo, which, like I said, I told you, you're going to shit when you see it.
Well, I remember even when I wrote the review for, you know, HGO, I mean, that was kind of the idea. I mean, that conclusion, the last 5+ minutes of this movie, to me, is just the most satisfying of really any Friday the 13th I've seen. You know, the way they've ended, sometimes you're like, yeah, it's kind of, you know, cookie cutter, and yeah, we're getting used to that, you know, leaving it open-ended and everything. But this one was really like, fuck, man, that was satisfying. It wasn't just like good. You felt satisfied. You know, it really hit the mark. And that was something else that I wanted to talk about a little bit. It's just, you go in, you're doing a fan film for Friday the 13th. You know, we've already talked about Tyrone Mathews and having him around. You obviously want to make references, have these little Easter eggs to the past films and whatnot. But that's kind of like, I would think that would be a real delicate balancing act, is like, because I think what you guys did really well is you made references to numerous things, but they were all very subtle. There was nothing in your face. It's, you know, just like a slap in the face. It was like the diehard fans picked up on it, and then you moved on. You didn't sit and linger on that. But how hard was it to be like, this is what we want to do, but we don't want it to be too much. We want it to be subtle. How did you pull that off?
I guess it was looking at what we had and then figuring out how Easter eggs could fit in. And just thinking naturally about the set in a way, you know, I mean, like, you know, coming up with something. I mean, I know this was an Easter egg, but to me, like, Steve Christie, the way he touches Alice's hair, he's kind of a perv. Like, and so I was like, right. Hey, this guy would hide Playboys in the office somewhere. So like that came, like that was inspired by like Steve Christie being, you know, as Andrew says, like a dirty dog. And stuff like that. So we tried to think of like the way that, like, there's when you walk into Kevin Bacon's or one of the bunk bedrooms, there's a painting hanging up, and I hung up that painting. Like, there's things that, like, I hung up that painting because I know Adrian King paints, and that I think Alice was an artist and did stuff and might have been painting, and hung one up in one of the cabins. So like there were things like that. I tried to think about the characters that we knew from part one and put their personality through set. And the only thing I wanted to call out attention to were the ribbons, because those were the most obvious things, because those are the death scenes. And with the, you know, the tools that we had and the rooms that we had, try to recreate as closely as possible where those crime scenes could have been in relation to the camp that we were shooting at, compared to what was Noby Bosco's kind of layout. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Easter eggs were great. I'd have to say probably one of my favorites was some yellow spray painting.
Wait, where was in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Oh, was that like? From our behind the scenes, or was that in the film?
The enchilada spray painting.
Yeah. In the bathroom, we spray painted demon. Damn enchiladas! Demon was here, and that was in our outhouse, and that's where everybody had to go to the bathroom. It was pretty funny. We had to get like one of those little porta toilets. Like we couldn't get a porta john or anything out there. We had like one of those camping toilets that we just stuck in the outhouse of the camp. It was just like, it was not the most ideal of shooting situations. I'll just say that, but we had a pretty tough crew that was just, you know, they just went with it, and you know, it just kind of is what it is. And we all got used to it and had a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm sure it was a great time. And before we move any further, I've been seeing some stuff, and of course you've mentioned you've been going back up, essentially restoring the shooting location. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. One of the things we wanted to do, because the locals were kind enough to let us shoot up there, is make sure that when we leave it, that it was in a better condition than when we found it. And so, you know, just being up there, moving things around, I mean, there's a lot of broken glass from up there already. All the windows are shattered. Like, I cut my arm while I was up there, and you know, I kind of like being up there too. It's a nice place to kind of hang out and go hiking. So we figured it might be nice to, you know, go up there and kind of room by room, you know, piece by piece, knock out all the glass, clean it up, pick up all the wood that's all over the place and all the trash that's been left up there, and just make it a place where if hikers want to go up there and walk through there, they're not doing it at risk of cutting themselves or stepping on a rusty nail or something like that. We figured that that's kind of like a way that we can say thank you, because the locals gave us a pass, we were able to film up there for basically free. You know, we didn't have to pay a location fee to be there. They just said, take care of the place. And so this is our way of saying thank you.
Got you. So essentially anybody that's in the area in California can just stop up and visit the set with anytime they want. It's basically just open to the public.
Yeah, no, it's open to the public. You got to know where you're going. We're not going to reveal the location yet because we'd like to finish cleaning up before people start wandering around. But there are pieces of the Never Hike Alone set still up there. The bunk bed set is intact 100% from the film. The attic set's pretty much intact. We've done some fun things with the main cabin. But we want to make it so you can walk through and kind of see it. It's like a kind of a live-in tour. if people awesome. Want to do the trek.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. Now, being that it is open to the public, I know you and I have had some conversations about passerbys or whatever, but maybe you can fill in on a little story, maybe a story or two, because I'm sure that while you're filming, you have people that are around, hikers or people passing by. So I'm sure you've got some sort of story you can share about that while you're filming.
Yeah, I mean, we had a couple people walk through. I mean, there was one time where, like, these people just drove through in a truck, and you really need to know that the camp is up there to drive up there. So we didn't know who these people were, and they just kind of drove around. And then there was a couple who walked through, like a couple of locals who were just kind of like doing their daily hike, and they came up to see what we were doing. And when they found out they were making a film, they were like, "Oh, that's really cool." And talking to us. And in that conversation led us in on a story that like maybe 3 years prior to shooting up there, the DEA had to run a drug cartel out of that area because they were growing and I think maybe cooking meth probably somewhere on that site or growing marijuana. So they were wondering when they started seeing cars going back up there again, they started getting worried. They thought the drug cartel was back, but they were like, "If you ever see anyone drive up with a bunch of AK-47s, you might want to run." And I was like, "Oh God." I was like, "We're going to end up in a movie ourselves." It's like, it's either we're going to get some psycho killer that's already here that we don't know about, or we're going to get killed by the cartel. I was like, either way, we're making this movie.
There's yeah. It's almost like a reverse Tropic Thunder movie. You're there making a horror movie, but next thing you know, here's the cartel or somebody else, and now they're killing you.
I know. I got to sell that story to Lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, so let's talk about some of the things that I've been seeing on social media and some of the bitches or complaints, whatever. Like I said, you're going to have your haters, and you've seen, you know exactly some of the stuff I'm going to say. So we'll just put you on the firing squad a little bit and let you go to bat. And some of the things I would go to bat for you, because people just don't get it. And of course, you had mentioned earlier things about Jason, well, the size of Jason and this, that, and the mm-hmm. other. And I can say that I've seen you in person. You're not a small person by any means. Now, you might not be 6'7" and, you know, 270 pounds or whatever, but there's certainly no reason. I mean, seeing some of the pictures are deceiving. So if you look at a picture of you, say, next to Derek Mears, or you next to somebody else, and then you look at yourself next to maybe somebody a little stockier built like Kane Hodder, depending on the clothing that you're wearing, depending on the Jason style of costume. And of course, photos can be deceiving. And some of the photos that I looked at originally, I thought Jason does look on the thinner side, but I didn't think really anything bad about it, because Jason in 2009, of course, Derek Mears' character is on the leaner side. And of course, Richard Brooker was on the leaner side and wore muscle shirts. So I have to go to bat for you on that and say that that's just people talking shit. You can say whatever you want, but there's nothing wrong with the way that Jason looked.
No, I mean, like, I knew people would have, I mean, we had to come up with our own look. I mean, we even got comments about the jacket and the Freddy versus Jason kind of look. And actually, like, it was kind of funny to hear the Freddy versus Jason argument, because I was like, that's not really what I was going for. I was actually, even though it's the Freddy versus Jason style with the jacket, I was like, that kind of started in Jason X. That's the first time he ever wore a jacket. It's very small and it was kind of there, but at that time, like, Kane was a little rounder, and it kind of like sat up in a weird way on him. And then they started throwing these giant coats on Jason. Like, Freddy versus Jason coat is very, very big, very, very bulky. In the remake, it was almost like a trench coat. And I was like, I just feel like that's too stylized. That's too cool. Like, it's not, it shouldn't be that thing. I kind of wanted to see a hybrid version of like the Dickie shirt with that style of jacket. So we've got that kind of style of jacket, put it on, put the sweater on underneath it. But really wanted to go with like a Jason look that wasn't yoked out either. I mean, there's no squat racks at Camp Crystal Lake. He's not there doing deadlifts. He's carrying dead bodies. He's doing some stuff. He's naturally big, but I tried to play off as much of my own. And because the costume is built to me, I can only work to my natural body. I did lift. I got bigger for the film. I probably gained like 10, 15 pounds in muscle. And so did Brian. Brian got bulked up and we, you know, wore the proper padding and stuff like that for stunts, which made us even bulkier. So I'd say like in the costume, we were standing there probably around 6'4", 230, 240, which I think is a good size for Jason. I think Jason can get too big, too bulky. I think that, you know, I'd look for something in the Ted White range. CJ's gigantic in it, but like he carries it well and even though he's large, he kind of has like a nice, you know, he doesn't have like a thick frame. So I kind of like that Jason. I like a tall Jason. I like a Jason with limbs, you know what I mean? Something that's going to swing and move and not be just like one little mass, but like, you know, something with moving parts. I think that Ted White brought that a lot out in his performance. And we wanted to have that. We wanted to have the natural movements, make Jason think a little bit, you know, make him curious, make him, you know, he, you know, you see him figuring things out. I think that that was a lot of fun to design with him. So it, a lot of it goes into it. So I don't know. I know that people kind of like will pick on this and that, but people, our Jason was pretty big.
Yeah, definitely. And I understand exactly what you were going for, and I had no issues with it whatsoever because I know people will just talk shit anyway. But if you look at the size of prior Jason actors, you're right on par with them for the most part. I think mm-hmm. Landon and I on our overview or thoughts episode had basically compared it to the 2009 film, if I remember correctly, Lando.
Yeah, I think so. Well, like you said, I mean, I think that there's something about that, just like you talk about Ted White and then Derek Mears. It's just the idea of a Jason that can get around, right? It's not just this, he's not bulky and he's not just kind of lumbering around. It's the idea of, like, you know, you take off, he can catch your ass. And I think that there's something, you know, that's really, really terrifying about that. I had no qualms at all, but I know you touched on it a little earlier and I just have to throw it out there. The, you know, Freddy versus Jason, it's a good time, but I mean, the look of Jason in that film is shit. And I think it would just be nice if more people actually just came out and actually said that. I'm sorry, I just had to throw my 2 cents out there. It's just, the look for Kurzinger was just ridiculous. So anyway, your look for this movie was just fine.
Yeah, we wanted to make it meaner. I feel like Freddy versus Jason kind of gave it a PG monster type look, like you were doing like Monster Squad's Frankenstein version of Jason, and it friendlied him up. The what?
I call it Oafish. I thought he was Oafish in Freddy versus Jason. Almost it was like a comic book character.
Yeah. Our goal was to definitely make Jason mean. That was part of the mask too. I mean, the mask without the chevron and just the white and just the black eyes. There was just something really mean and kind of haunting about it. I was like, this is going to be our look. Like, if Roy has blue chevrons, we have no chevrons because we're not legit. But like, so that's going to be our mark. That's the way I kind of thought about it in my head. I was like, this is how we're going to, this is, you know, if people want to differentiate us from the series and we can make our own mark, like, let's come up with our own style. And I think that was kind of part of it, was let's do something different, but let's do the Friday the 13th that we think could be made that would, you know, feel like the old one, but still give you new stuff and kind of go from there. So that was also part of Jason's design and that kind of thinking.
Yeah, that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Nate. I know you and I talked about it before. It's just like, but the diehard fans and whatnot, it's the subtlety of like the movements of Jason. So people who the criticism, the first and only thing that comes to my mind is, you know, toward the conclusion of the film with the ambulance. And, you know, Matthews gets back and, you know, it's the maggot head situation and the way your head jerked up, you know, it was the fact that you didn't just kind of glance up or anything. It was like this jerk. And that was something that to me, you know, over the last 5 or 6 films, that was something, you know, that's how Jason reacted whenever he would hear someone say his name or anything like that. And I thought that was spot on. Mm-hmm. And it's just like when people want to sit and nitpick about things like that, that's a little harder, you know, to replicate, to get exactly right. And I mean, how many people who've played Jason have people really felt were exactly spot on to what we wanted to be? I mean, you talk about Brooker and Ted White, you know, Kane Hodder and CJ. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the best of the best. And, you know, you guys were right there with that. I mean, it was the movements and, you know, the mannerisms, they were all consistent with what we've come to expect Jason to be. So, I mean, I thought it was quite good, actually.
Oh, thanks. You want to jump into some of the other what else you got for me?
Yeah. We'll move on to a couple other things. For one, and I would have to agree, but I understand that that's just the way that it is. I've seen a couple people mention, well, it doesn't even really look like Camp Crystal Lake. It looks like they're up in Oregon or the Pacific Northwest or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, they are in California, and the trees obviously do look a little bit different. So that's to me something that you just look past. Because obviously East Coast and West Coast, you've been to the East Coast, you know that they're two different places and the landscaping does look different. So to me, that was something that I just brushed off and just took it for what it was.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, we're obviously we're in California. That's where we're going to film it. Most of the Friday the 13th films were filmed in California, more than any other state. I know it's supposed to look like Jersey, or New England, or something in that area. And if I had my choice, I probably would have shot this thing in New England with, you know, all the money in the world. But I got to say that I actually really enjoyed the change of scenery, only because I liked the style of these trees. I liked the style of the camp. I kind of liked shooting there. I thought it brought kind of a fresh kind of take on it in a way. Like I really enjoyed the sharp, pointy edges. Everything up there was in triangles and angled and sharp and dangerous, and it looked dangerous. And I just thought that the film had such a great aesthetic to it that if you're going to go back and say, hey, all right, you know that you have Camp Crystal Lake, you know that we're building on mythos and doing Friday the 13th, that if you're going to go back and you're going to, you know, have a chance to kind of restate Camp Crystal Lake, like give it a little bit more scope, make it a little bit bigger. I think that this is kind of a good example of how you could do that. So, you know, the different levels, going to the different levels of the camp and things like that. I really enjoyed the look of the film. And the look of the way everything, you know, it kind of gave it a grand scopiness, which I think that the other films kind of lack. You know, you probably get it in Freddy versus Jason because it's a $50 million film. You get a little bit more scope. They shot that up in, you know, in British Columbia or Vancouver. Well, I guess that's the same place. so they have that. They had that thing. And I always like that. I always kind of like the larger than life feel of it. And, you know, it's just because I'm a big fan of Part 6, I think. I think I liked that aspect when it started to feel larger than life. So I think that's one thing we went for with utilizing the surroundings that we had, knowing we were shooting in Big Bear and we had those big mountain roads and, you know, the trees and the lakes and everything that we could shoot around, you know, in Arizona, too. I mean, that's when it really, that's when it really changed. But, you know, we kind of took advantage of that. Like, let's show the natural beauty of this area. And it's, you know, it's beautiful to look at. I know it's not Jersey, but it's still, you know, it's still beautiful.
Absolutely. And the drones obviously really set the tone. And I think that's why a lot of people make the comments that they do, because the drones really show the difference in the trees. Because as film, like this is going to be essentially a direct sequel to Part 1. You expect the landscape to kind of look just like that. So for me, the only thing that really, I mean, there's a couple minor things, because nothing's ever perfect, but some things are just opinion. For me, the only thing that could have made this better for the most part would have been if you could have shot it at the original Part 1 filming location, because then it would have been problem solved. Here, we got the exact same set.
And we would have done probably the exact same thing. We would have found a way to make that camp really feel way out there, to really make that road that leads out there feel like it's not just right out of town. I mean, it's a drive into town, you know? Just like the camp that we shot at. So I think that was all I was going for. And I think that's what Victor Miller intentioned in the first film, was to make it feel like Camp Crystal Lake was far away from any type of, you know, safe, you know, any type of safety, any type of, you know, parental figure that can come in and save the day. He wanted them to make it feel like it was out there. So that was kind of the inspiration for Never Hike Alone, was going back to those roots of, like, before you do anything else in telling the story of this film, you have to remind the audience that this is all about isolation. And this is all about being alone and being somewhere where no one can help you. And that's what Friday the 13th is supposed to be about. When you least expect it, something's going to get you. So it was kind of going back into that theme. And I think that, you know, being able to shoot at the original camp would have been icing on the cake to go in and be able to redress those scenes as they were. And then, you know, give them the 35-year or 37-year like aging treatment. That would have been really cool to, like, not just go in and put a bed with Jason's name on the header, but, like, go in and actually say, look, we're back. We're back to where we started. And I think you'd really get that Force Awakens feeling after that.
Absolutely. Especially with the drone view technology of today. And you did a great job with that of setting the isolation scene, like you just mentioned with that. So definitely a great job on that. But yeah, if you could have shot there, that would have been icing on the cake. Another thing I've heard people talk about, and I did notice this too, and Lando and I kind of discussed it. So, but I'm sure there's an explanation for that. But the footsteps of Jason seem like thundering to me. When I watched it the first time, I'm like, wow, those footsteps, like he sounds like a giant coming through the woods.
Yeah, man. They're loud. They're really, and we were going for that. I mean, the original intention, like we sat down and I was like, listen, like there's going to be a difference in weight when these two characters are running. When I hear Kyle running around, Like, it's okay. It should be light, fast, you know, very quick. I was like, when I hear Jason, like, I want to hear his presence. I want him to be like a goddamn T-Rex, like shaking the whole place when people are in their seats in this theater. Cause I was really thinking about, like, at the time, like the Telluride premiere, and like, you know, I really wanted to do something that, like, when people were watching the film, they were going to feel the bass in the seats when he stepped and things like that. And in the process of doing that, we were building it and shaping it. And then we started kind of running out of time. And I said, you know, it's good enough, because we got to do, you know, because when you're working on a film, I mean, it's only one element, and you're trying to build a 55-minute piece. And there's so much sound design in there. I don't think people notice. Like, people will say, like, oh, the sound design sucks because the footsteps are bad. It's like, well, if you actually listen to the whole film, there's a lot of really great sound design in there. And we did leave the footsteps maybe a little hot, but, you know, at the end of the day, you just kind of go, yep, that's the way it is. But we wanted Jason to walk with weight. We wanted him to know when he was coming after Kyle, when he's walking through the woods, you can hear him far away, or if he's outside, you can hear him approaching, that, you know, that he's a force, and that there's, you know, and he's, you know, and he's something to be reckoned with. And we thought that would be a nice kind of audible cue to, like, bring him in and out of scenes and things like that. And then when he wants to, he can turn it off. You know, he can go into stock mode. But if I think about it, it's like in the game, you can actually hear him walking around, and you can hear his footsteps, and then he can go into stock mode and he can kind of turn it off. And even though I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't trying to copy that, but at the same time, we kind of tried to do that with the film, was that, like, when he's lumbering around and he's going after Kyle, like, you can feel that weight, you can feel that kind of power coming after him. And then when he wants to, he can turn it off. And kind of move around and being able to slip through the shadows and sneak up on him when he's there. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of our way of Jason, like, knowing what he is and how he can attack. We kind of tried to work that in there, but as far as the steps go, it was just, you know, we left him a little hot, but that's just kind of the name of the game when you're trying to do a bunch of things and you can't get to everything. And sometimes when you listen to it afterwards, you go, oh, maybe I would have changed that, or I would have done that. But, you know, that we always wanted to do that, and I, you know, I stand by it. I'm sorry they're too hot, but oh well.
I mean, they're a little hot. Like I said, I did notice it at first. That really stuck out to me, and I figured, well, there's probably a reason for that, because mm-hmm. knowing all the conversations we've had and everything that I know, everything's for a reason. You're methodical in what you were doing, so I'm sure that, like you just explained, that's why we wanted to try to achieve that vibe with Jason. So that makes sense to me. And
I'm sure we were going for something.
And probably now that if you could change something, you probably would tone it down a little bit, at least, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I you talk to any filmmaker, they'll go in and they'll keep tinkering with their films to the end of time. Just ask George Lucas. It's just like, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're especially when you're working on independent productions, you're going 5,000 different directions. You know, I was working on score, sound design, color timing, mixing, you know, there was still music that I had coming in and getting mixed for, like, the rock tracks and things like that. So, like, when you're doing that and you're juggling a lot of things, like, things are bound to fall through the cracks. And the first time I listened to the mix, I get to listen to it in a giant theater and it sounded great. And then I had to wait for things to get exported. And by the time it lands in my lap and I listen to it kind of on my system, which it also sounds really, really good on, I still don't notice it. It isn't until I started listening to it, like, on my phone and, like, on a computer speaker and things like that, I was like, oh, well, the way we've mixed it, this really cuts through. I notice it now, and I know what people are talking about, because when we were listening, it sounded great. It was well balanced and everything. It's just sometimes in different systems, it will sound different. But those are things that when you're working for a real studio, that you can have something exported and you can go back in the next day, listen to it on every different type of thing, you know, have them re-export it again, because, you know, you have it in your budget. For us, we only had so much money to go in. We can only do things so many times. So when we did our final export, there was no going back. You know what I mean? It was like, we were getting it and we had to move forward because that's what we could afford. And that's, you know, and that those are the sacrifices you make as an independent filmmaker. But at the same time, within that allotted amount of time, it's our responsibility to get it as good as possibly is. So, you know, overall, I super stand by it. Are there things in there that I nitpick and wish I could go in and kind of nudge and tuck away? Absolutely. But that's kind of the nature of filmmaking, is at some point you got to put it down, you got to share it with everybody else. And whatever mistakes you made, you just learn from them and get better next time.
Totally understandable. And of course, the anticipation of wanting to get it out there, because it is so highly anticipated. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, I guess the last thing we'll address that I've seen others mention, I kind of thought the same myself. I think me and Lando discussed it too, was, okay, Drew's character, Kyle. So we'll just refer to him as Kyle. Yeah. So Kyle, the first time I watched it, I'm like, okay, Kyle, you did such a good job of isolating him. And of course, we all know that he's out there and there's going to be confrontation with Jason. And then it happens. And I'm thinking, and especially in a couple of the scenes, I'm like, Kyle doesn't really look that frightened. A normal person would be scared shitless. Some of the facial expressions where he kind of is almost nonchalant, like, oh, you know, I'm going to fight this guy, whatever. And I'm thinking, man, in most, what we're used to seeing in most Friday films, these people are scared to death. But he didn't seem that scared in some scenes, at least to me anyway. Lando, what were your thoughts on that? I can't remember exactly.
I thought, you know, there were some moments where it was just like, no, you know, yeah, you'd think it'd be a little bit different than that. But I thought overall, you know, I thought it was strong. And I think is, you know, part of it would have to be go back and watch it again to focus a little bit more on that. But I know something that you talked about is with the window scene, you know, being, you know, flying out the window, that was something that stuck with you a little bit. So maybe you want to talk about that.
Yeah, maybe that's where I first noticed it, where the initial, I guess, confrontation starts. And it's, I'm thinking, man, you know, he just got, you know, there's Jason and holy shit, it's on. And he knows that he's got to do whatever he has to do to make it out alive because he's there by himself. And maybe that's where, I guess, the thought of he doesn't look as scared as you would think that he would be. And of course, I understand that there's got to be some filler in there, but Jason does look a little rusty in a couple scenes where normally he would just be hacking the shit out of these people. But then again, when you have multiple kills, if you have 18 kills in a film, you have time to do that. Whereas this film, obviously, watching it a second time, I'm like, okay, objectively, Jason probably, if the camp's been abandoned, he hasn't really seen anybody in a while, he would be rusty. Mm-hmm. So there's both thoughts on that. But I just remember thinking a couple times that Kyle doesn't really look all that terrified like he does in some other scenes. So that was just my thought on it anyway.
I mean, in that scene in particular, there are two kind of like really key shots that are meant to kind of show that. And that's the first time we kind of pan up to Drew or Kyle. And you see it kind of, you see the axe land between his face and then we tilt up to his face. The expression on there, I think, is pretty good. I mean, it's this shocked expression of like, oh, like, it's kind of a holy shit expression. Like, I can't believe this thing. Like, it's all these things. I can't believe it's real. And we really worked with Drew on that, of being like, hey, when the camera hits your face on this, you're going to be like, holy shit. But before he even has a chance to be scared, Jason attacks him and he goes into fight or flight mode and he fights. And, you know, I think that's something, I think in other Friday the 13th films, what you see is people turn into dread because they end up discovering dead bodies first. And like multiple dead bodies that are their best friends. So it's like this emotional thing they're going through and then Jason shows up. So they're already a hysterical mess. In this version, our character's finding things, but he's kind of working his way through each thing in his own way. The first time he sees the blood, he backs up and he drops his stuff and he gets kind of startled. But the more he sees, the more he becomes desensitized to it and realizes it's just a story. This stuff's still up. This is going to be great for my YouTube, definitely. And just try to keep my composure and look cool for my fans and then work his way through it. By the time he finds Pamela's head, it's shock, but there's so much shock of what's going on. I don't know what's going on, rather than going into that typical Friday hysterical screaming and running around with your head cut off. And I don't know if you guys saw Death Note. You guys see that?
Not yet.
So in that film, and any listeners that have seen the film will probably know what I'm talking about. In the film, there's a scene where, like, and I don't care, I'm going to spoil it because I think if you haven't seen it by now, your fault. Came out before Nip Hagelon. there's a scene where the character first encounters like the demon creature and he screams like a girl, and it was funny, but I saw people complaining about that, about like how him screaming like a girl was so over the top and so kind of weird to them. Like, I thought it was hilarious. I was dying. I was like, this kid's screaming like a little girl. It's kind of funny. He's like hiding under the table and stuff like that. And I think that if you compare that character and Drew's character, they're completely opposite things. Like, that, his instinct was to run, hide, and be scared. And Drew's instinct, or Kyle's instinct, is to fight and survive. And the other shot in that scene is after he gets up after being whacked off the tree. And he sits up and he sees like kind of things. Again, it's another shocked reaction. Like, holy shit. Like he keeps having these moments like he can't go on, and then gets up and sees it and has to keep going, looking over his shoulder while he's running away. The panic of running away and not really being able to tell where he's going and not seeing the sign and tripping. I think that those are all signs of fear and adrenaline running through us. And that's kind of how we were building it. We were doing our fear through fear and adrenaline rather than hysteria, which is kind of the model of the old Friday the 13th, where it's you get characters into hysterical mode and, you know, everything's going crazy and they have to collect themselves and do it. And in our way, his adrenaline goes up, he injures himself, and he collects himself, realizing that if I don't pay attention, if I don't stay on my shit, I'm going to die. So it's about him controlling his emotions the entire time. And you see like moments where he gets angry and moments where he gets scared and where he tries to hide and things like that. So we tried to show a range. I think that's kind of like how we were trying to portray it.
And after watching it numerous times, that's kind of where my thought process went, is this is a breath of fresh air to Friday. And like you said, usually there is the hysterical, oh, a dead body just fell on me, or I seen all my friends dead or whatever. So I'm thinking at first your reaction is, yeah, he doesn't really look that scared. And then watching it again and again, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, I can kind of see where they're going with this, but your explanation was definitely right on point. So I definitely can see what you were trying to achieve with that. And it totally makes sense now.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's move on to, I've seen some information and talked to a couple individuals, and to my understanding, and I'll let you go into the fine details, but to my understanding, very soon there's going to be replica Never Hike Alone hockey masks made from the screen use mold.
That is correct. On March 15th of this year, we're going to actually do a Blu-ray campaign for Never Hike Alone. And in that campaign, we're going to offer basically screen matched Never Hike Alone masks done from the original mold that made the Never Hike Alone mask for the film. We've partnered with Brandon Scott Murphy from Sculptor Die. We had the mold shipped from CFX to his house. We asked CFX to do it, and they didn't have time in their schedule. And through this, you know, through making this film and, you know, knowing you, Nathan, and knowing a few other people, I was introduced to Brandon, and we've become friends, and he decided to take the challenge. And so in the Indiegogo campaign, we're going to offer the mask as one of the rewards.
Oh, awesome. And Brandon, mm-hmm. of course, does great work. I own some of Brandon's stuff, mutual friend as well. And I know he's looking forward to it. And there's a mm-hmm. lot of people that have been interested in replica masks. I've seen on different social media sites, people asking about a replica mask. I believe there's a couple other individuals that are making a replica, but obviously not off of the screen use mold, to my knowledge, that they're basically just put them on a blank from whatever film. I've seen one or two floating around, but I don't know what blanks they used. So
yeah, I think there's one floating around from a blank from a Freddy versus Jason. They look pretty good. I mean, it looks like the other films underneath. And then I think one person molded their own custom one. So it's kind of like their own version of it, the way they saw it from the film. So I think that's kind of cool. Like I'm not against it. I think it's kind of fun to see people, you know, because there's different types of every type of mask out there. And I think that's kind of a compliment. So you know, at the same time, like we know that people really want this mask and people really want the Blu-ray. They wanted physical media. So we were like, you know what? Like people are asking for it. Let's figure out a way to do it. So we came up with the idea of running the Indiegogo, doing the same thing that we did last time with the film production, is that all the physical media production and the production of everything will be paid for by the Indiegogo campaign. And all of our proceeds will be donated once again to Penny Pines, and I think it's called Care Fire, to help with the fires that were in Santa Barbara and Ventura County. It's actually where Andrew lives, our lead star. There were mudslides and all these different things that happened up there. So we want to help with those relief efforts and do something good with the sale of the masks and the sale of the physical media and, you know, give the fans what they want. Because, you know, ever since we released the film, we've got a lot of requests for Blu-rays and masks and all sorts of things. So we're trying to, as we're putting Never Hike Alone to rest and letting it do its thing, you know, we're trying to give the fans whatever we can with the means that we have.
And obviously merchandise, I'm assuming, still available at wompstompfilms.com.
No, actually, we took that down. We got down to the bare minimum, and we gave kind of the rest of it away. We will be doing some convention runs this year, and we'll be doing some stuff. I have some extra posters on me and stuff, and if people want to reach out to contact at wompsonfilms.com, we can work something out if you know, you're interested in a poster or something like that. But as far as T-shirts go, they're all gone. I have some stickers left, but it wasn't worth keeping the store up for that stuff.
Understandable.
And yeah, we liquidated our original Kickstarter thing. We had some stuff left over. We wanted to make it available, and once it was liquidated, we shut it down.
Now, you mentioned conventions. It's only February, so convention season will be kicking off before mm-hmm. you know it, actually. So what dates do you have in mind as of right now? Obviously, this list could change at any time, but what are you anticipating to be appearing at so far?
Right now, the first one we got into is Crypticon Seattle, May 4th through the 6th of this year. We're excited about that. We're going to do a screening, live Q&A. I'm going to be there. Andrew's going to try to be there. I think he will be. And then Kyle Klein, one of the producers, will be there. He's actually a Seattle native, so we want him to go home and go to his hometown and show off the movie there. And then we actually partnered with a fan of the film, and a big Friday the 13th fan reached out to me. We're going to set up a screening in upstate New York. It's going to be a dual screening with Jason Lives and Never Hike Alone. So they've paid to have Jason Lives screened at this theater, and then they're going to do an extra hour and do a Never Hike Alone screening right afterwards. It's a kid named Joe Gallo, and it's called Track Cinema. It's in Auburn, New York. So that's going to be April 13th of this year, Friday the 13th. They're going to do a midnight double screening of Jason Lives and Never Hike Alone.
Yeah, like I said, convention season will be here before you know it. There's a lot of great mm-hmm. shows coming up this year. Now, that you mentioned the Blu-ray, though, as far mm-hmm. as that's concerned, do you have an anticipated or a roundabout release date that the fans who want that Blu-ray copy can expect that? Or is that basically dependent on how the Indiegogo does?
Well, the way the crowdfunding will work is that we'll run it from March 15th to April 13th. Once we close the account, or once we close the campaign, it takes about 2.5 weeks for the money to transfer. Once that happens, we'll submit all of our invoices. We'll get all the media produced. Probably take a couple weeks, and then we're hoping to partner with something with some type of service, and we're trying to figure out which one it is right now. We don't know who it is yet. But basically a service where we can send all of our merchandise to them, and they're going to fulfill the orders this time. Because I felt like it took us a while to get through all of our Kickstarter orders last time. It was just kind of me and my wife doing it, and then sometimes some people would come and help out. And it took a while to get everybody's stuff out. And if you're a Kickstarter listening and you're sorry it took so long. Everybody just got everything just recently. We just sent out the last of our props. We feel like for this, we want it to go out, be really, really fast. So I'm, by midsummer, the latest, I think we'll have the Blu-ray out. We're going to hopefully include a camp tour. So we're going to do a Never Hike Alone style walk, camp, hike up the path to where the camp is, and do a tour through where we filmed everything. Me and Drew are going to do it and kind of walk through with GoPros and have somebody film it as we're doing it and kind of do it Never Hike Alone style. It's going to be pretty fun.
And speaking of Drew was on the show last year, and he will be back on again in the near future to talk about all the things that we couldn't talk about before. So, but yeah, man, I just want to say a big thank you for bringing your contribution to our favorite franchise. I love the film. Obviously, just like everybody else, I wish the film was longer. If it would have been filmed at the part one location, icing on the cake, all the little bullshit critiques and everything, it is what it is. But I love it, and I just want to say a big thank you. I think it's a great breath of fresh air to the Friday community, especially not getting the film that we thought we were going to get. And, of course, the Friday the 13th Part 3 Memoriam documentary, in combination with the two of those, it was just a nice holdover until we hopefully get that 13th film. So big thanks, man. I appreciate all your hard work and everybody that was involved.
No, you're welcome, man. We greatly appreciate everything that everyone said about the project. It's been very, it's been great to hear that. I mean, especially what you said, Lando, feeling like a fresher breath air, like you've watched it, like it's the first time you've watched a Friday in a long time. Like, that was the goal. We wanted to see if we could do it, and we didn't know if we could. And to see the reaction, it's mission accomplished. So it feels really good, and we appreciate all the support that you know, the Camp Blood podcast has given us, and you guys have, you know, kept in touch, and it's been really great getting to, you know, check in with you guys and update you about the project. It's good to be on this side of it after going through everything that we went through to make the film and everything we were working for. And we really appreciate you guys supporting the film.
Hey, we're here to help out in any way that we can. Anytime that you want to come on, or anybody does and wants to get a word out about something, whether that be the Kickstarter or just anything else in general, we're here for you anytime you want. You know, you're always welcome. So Lando, any final thoughts?
No, I think you pretty much touched on everything I wanted to say. It's like, as you said, as a fan, I'm just thankful that this exists. I mean, it really was something that felt like, you know, this is what we've been waiting for. So it was very nice to be able to just see that and enjoy it. Like you said, everybody's sitting around and enjoying the Friday the 13th film for the first time in a long time, and you guys definitely accomplished that.
I appreciate that, man.
All right. Well, big thanks to Vince for joining us tonight. And that wraps up another episode of Return to Camp Blood. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at. And if you haven't seen Never Hike Alone, shame on you. Take your ass to YouTube and check it out for free. Pass the link on to all your fellow Friday fans. You can also check out the film's Facebook page for more information and some awesome behind the scenes photos. They've been great at releasing all kinds of great behind the scenes content. There's no lack of that. So go over there to Facebook and check that out too. This episode was brought to you by Never Hike Alone from Womp Stomp Films. Until next time.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.